Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Maggie Vo. Maggie's a managing partner and chief investment officer at Fuel Venture Capital. Maggie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Christian. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So why don't we start with Fuel Venture Capital? What's the firm's investment thesis?
So Fuel Venture Capital is a global venture capital firm. We have office in Miami and in Silicon Valley. We invest in technology companies, early stage to mid stage. The earliest we go to like late pre-seed, and then we go on the way to Series B, following up and take the company to exit as well. And from the sector standpoint, we focus on fintech, consumer marketplace or consumer platform, enterprise SaaS, and obviously disruptive AI. And from the geographic standpoint, we invest global, like I mentioned earlier, overweight in the US, but we do have a network of investor, founders on a global basis. So we invest global, and our team also, the way we build a team is very diverse. That's why we think that, investing, we want to look for deals, not just in the US, but, in Europe, in Asia, in Dubai, in Latin America as well.
Fantastic. So I have a bunch of questions I'd like to ask, but before we do, this is a very unique podcast because you and I are both chartered financial analyst charter holders, arguably the pinnacle professional designation for investment analysis. And so if you can, one, share your experience as a CFA charter holder, but also just as your professional career leading up to Fuel and what that looked like.
Sure. So I have been in the fund management business since I started my career. At the beginning of the careers, my thought is if you want to advise investor to build a diversified portfolio, you have to know about different asset class. Otherwise, you just focus on, on one, right? So I work for different funds, manage, public equity, real estate. And then right before joining Fuel, I was a global hedge fund manager, managing a global long short equity strategy. That's also where I got my CFA. I think that's really the moment that made me, I am who I am today, is because at that time I noticed that a lot of people moving away from, when I say people, I mean investor, moving away from traditional asset class, going into alternative investment. And at the same time, you notice that at that time, that's around 2017, a lot of technology companies decided to stay in the private market much longer than, before. Like you have Amazon went to the public market when it was only 3 years old. Nowadays, you have technology companies, decide to go to the public market when they already, 10 years old, or have the valuation is already super high. So my investor want me to leave what I was doing and going into the private market, trying to fight for them those opportunity, let them sit at the table. And that's the reason why I left the public market, going into the private market. But because the CFA, the hedge fund mindset is still, a part of my DNA. I went to Fuel Venture Capital, managing, venture capital as an asset class, but I also integrate the risk management, mindset, the hedging mindset, into the private innovation market on private innovation investment, which I think that the timing is really right, because venture capital has become a little bit more mainstream, a little bit more mature, and it's requiring a new way to manage the asset class. And we at Fuel Venture Capital, we pioneer the concept called hedge venture. And that's combining, you know, the perspective of, you know, my hedging thinking, combined with the upside potential of early stage investing.
Wow. Well, I get a lot of questions. Okay, so before we do, just for the benefit of our audience, who, you know, I find in my conversations with the general investing public, they're generally familiar with mutual funds, which, as you and I know, are long only. They've heard of hedge funds, but don't necessarily appreciate that they have the opportunity to go short. This creates opportunity, or hedging strategies like stock options, in so much as there is a science and art behind portfolio management. And if you understand the dynamics of your individual assets, you can construct a portfolio where you can better manage your downside risk. For sake of example, understanding the correlation between your assets. And obviously we could probably devote a podcast to this. But I've asked this question to our guests before. Generally, it's been to our venture debt lenders around the concept of insurance, but I am really intrigued. Hedge venture, how are you managing your downside when looking to invest in early stage companies?
So I think, you know, there's a lot of tools in my toolkit box, right? So the way I look at the hedge venture is, you know, you have to look from the top down hedging, bottom up hedging, operational hedging, and leveraging a lot of financial engineering or terms. So there are a couple of things, like example, you know, traditional venture capital, they normally like to write you a big check so that at the get-go, they get 20% of the companies. Right. Because, you know, coming from the hedge fund, I do think that that's not the way, you know, the right way looking from the risk standpoint. One thing different between the public market and the private market is, in the public market, you can have a lot of information. You can go to read your 10K, 10Q, listening to analysts. In the private market, especially in the early stage, you don't have a lot of information. Right. So that's risky. And the only way to buy down risk is to be involved, to, you know, be with the company for a long time, understanding, you know, the gap or the help that you can provide to the company. So at Field Venture, we do phase investing, right? Mm-hmm. We write you a small check so that we can become an insider. We can, you know, helping you with what you need. And in the meantime, we build a conviction. So we don't just look at flip through the deck and then make a big decision, but we do diligence after we go inside. And we, you know, identify the key KPI that the company needs to achieve for every single financing round. And if they achieve it, and if we help them to achieve it, we will continue to build out our position. That's the part of hedging too. You build out your position over the long term so that you can reduce, you know, the downside risk. Instead of, like, you know, making an investment, and if the thesis, you know, doesn't happen, you just have to write it off. So that's one way we look at things. Another thing I think is very important, and playing to my math major and CFA kind of thing, is we don't just invest in, you know, calculate vanilla deal. We like creative structure, right? And we, on behalf of our investor, we negotiate protective terms, which come in very handy, especially if you notice that over the past 18 months, venture capital has gone through a little bit of a winter temps. And those are the time when, you know, your terms you negotiate is very important. You know, on the you know, financial tools that you negotiate is very important. So we leverage that a lot as well to make sure that we minimize the downside.
So I love it. And as I was listening to you speak, you know, again, I'm thinking back to your time in a hedge fund and when I was trading, and you know, there's most people don't appreciate that. You know, the most successful hedge fund managers really start by thinking about how do you minimize your losses before you start thinking about maximizing your winners. And admittingly, I'm sure there are a lot of venture capital managers who adopt a similar approach, but I've never heard anyone say, "Hey, I'm gonna size up my winners." Obviously, they're follow on funds, but this idea that I'm gonna start by placing a small bet to see the inner workings, I love it. I haven't heard it framed like that. So I imagine then, as part of your due diligence, you may overweight the founding team. You know, I'd love to get your perspective on patterns or profiles that you use when evaluating potential investments?
Yeah, so, like I said, again, coming from the public market, we built a very rigorous, underwriting process when we look at deals. And obviously, you just mentioned, right, the founding team is one of the biggest factors. Before we even write a check, we had to get to know the founders. And we call it the quality of human capital. And it's not just the founders, right? And I can go into like what we look for the founders, but we want to make sure that, founders normally, it's very hard to find someone good at everything, right? And people are saying that if you want to go fast, you go by yourself. If you want to go far, you go with a team. So we want to make sure that they have a strong founding team. And we like to see that they have the skill set complement each other. Right. You don't want to. I mean, I'm not saying that you don't want to, but it's always great to have founders, who really know the technical part, because at the end of the day, this is a technology companies. But also, I mean, fundraising is such a big thing when you being an entrepreneur. I come across some founders just like, I just want to operate companies, maybe I don't want to raise fund, and thinking that fundraising is our job, which I don't totally agree with it. But fundraising require storytelling skill, requiring a lot of charismatic. So I like to see the founding team have complementary skill set. I like to see the commitment. Right, meaning that you not just go around and chasing the momentum, the theme. Let's say that you jump from crypto, or now it's an AI. You just put a .AI after your company names. It's more about what is the insight that you think that you have about a particular problem that you try to solve. What make you have an unfair competitive advantage? Hmm. Because I always say, right, why do I bet on you but not somebody else? And that's just the question that every had to answer to whoever that they pitched to.
So I understand, like, this is just kind of, we know it's hard bringing an early stage company to life, and I've heard over the years that there are personality traits that, and seeing this kind of firsthand myself, that lend themselves to being successful. Any in particular you seek to hone in on when interviewing and getting to know a founder team?
You mean the personality trait? So one way I look at things is, if you look at somebody else's resume, if they are a superstar founder, an overachiever, you can see that DNA on that resume. That person will never sit still in one place for 10 years. And even if they commit to a company for so long, you see that they get a promotion because they just, the builder, they have a growth mindset. They cannot sit still. After they figure out a problem, they want to go to get another problem. If after they think that they already figure out what they're doing right now, they want to learn to go to the next step, right? And it doesn't have to be, just the professional career. Maybe it can be in, their academic result, maybe in their, athlete profile, everything. And so you look at the resume first, or I used to think that I have a very good skill looking at people LinkedIn, knowing, like, trying to imagine that person, how did he or she grow since he or she was a child, right? Because think about, right, overachiever, superstar, they cannot just become superstar in one day. I was like, wake up, I become a superstar. They have that trait in them. And, like, for example, I was born and raised in Vietnam. Right. I moved to the U.S. 17 years ago, and, English is a second language. I came to the U.S. and got scholarship, went to college, and, went to work for hedge fund. And when I worked for a few venture capital, I applied as an analyst. And today I'm a managing partners of the funds. So I was just kind of like thinking that when I'm looking for that person, I'm going back to my profile and seeing that, okay, are they ambitious? Do they have a growth mindset? Do they have the resilience? Meaning that, when you talk to them, if life throw at them something, are they going to back down and then changing direction? Are they consistent? Or, commit to that. So those are the thing that I feel like I can spot it from the resume, from the LinkedIn, and from the story they share.
Totally makes sense. My experience is this parallel is just given the challenges that exist, or you know, early stage founders invariably chase that someone who's a higher overachiever is well suited for a lot of the obstacles that seem to make their way into bringing a company to life. I have to ask, you know, I find a lot of who we are today is influenced by our culture. And I presume I'm in the majority of our listeners who've not yet made it to Vietnam, though I very much would like to go. How was growing up in Vietnam influenced today how you look at the investing world?
Sorry, can you ask the question? How do I grow in Vietnam affecting what?
Well, I imagine completely different culture than the United States. And so I imagine you've learned a whole host of really valuable lessons growing up in just a place that's different today. And so how has that impacted you, knowing that the world isn't the US, and that there's opportunity everywhere, but maybe you don't see it because your vision has been limited to just one culture, in my case, the US. Love to hear your perspective of having grown up in a totally different country.
Yeah, I think I always think that is my my competitive advantage compared to everyone else. Especially, you know, in venture capital, it's dominated by male. And if you go to a lot of VC fund, you're seeing that, you know, they normally have the same type of people. Like I mentioned earlier, dominated by male, or going to the same Ivy League school and then working for the same type of companies. Their profile is very similar to each other. Right. And because I'm coming from such a unique background from Vietnam, from an emerging market, I think that I have a different way to look at things. And that make, you know, any conversation that I'm being a part of very robust, because you will never be able to expect, you know, where I'm coming from. You're right. When we grow up so differently, everything that we look at is very differently. And even the way I build my team is as well. I look at certain thing that I think that is very valuable. You know, immigrant mindset, or somebody have a chip on the shoulder, making them work a little bit harder. Maybe people from, you know, you know, was born and raised in the US don't see it the same way. And I do think that, you know, VC is an asset class that we built and we invest in the future. And the future is a lot of culture there. The future have male and female. The future have both developed market and emerging markets. So I think that it's important to have a very diverse background, have a very open-minded when it's come to investing in venture capital, and my background play into it.
I mean that makes great sense, and you know, I love the analogy. So I'm first generation American. Mom was born and raised in Sweden. Dad was born and raised in Mexico. You know, and I don't know that I was mature enough as a kid to pick up on the fact that they were assimilating into a new culture, but as you know, your reference to the chip on the shoulder, I think they were both really hard workers. And I think there's a part of that where like, hey, I may have something to prove, you know, I deserve to be here. And yeah, as I think about it, it's a great point. You're bringing, you know, a whole different mindset that I believe makes us, you know, that much more potent, because we can see different perspectives that maybe our US born and raised counterparts can't. So with that, you're investing domestically and internationally. I know you shared with us what some of the focus, but what are you bullish on today and what has your attention?
So I mentioned earlier, right, we're investing in, you know, the fintech, because we came from the financial industry, me and my the other general partners. But recently, obviously, we cannot not talk about AI. AI has been something super exciting. I see from, you know, the most basic level at our firms and at our portfolio companies that every leveraging AI one way or the others. We're just investing in, you know, a pre-seed company like named Oracle. It's a, you know, a legal tech companies, but not selling to replace, you know, lawyer. We don't at the firm, we don't actually believe that AI going to replace human being. I think that we view AI as more like an enhancing tools to help us work faster and more efficient. And, you know, with our goal, it's allowing us to review, you know, document contracts in a much more efficient way, right? In the past, if you think about it, every time we're being sent some legal document, we have to send it to our lawyers, and it's going to sit there for like weeks before they even want to touch on that, and then you have to educate them what you're doing, which in any other day you will receive like a massive bills of, you know, hours, because they, you know, they have to understand your problem first. And with Argo, we can become so more efficient in a way that, you know, we upload the document, we ask the question we need to ask, we narrow it down to the part that we think that we can come to our lawyer later. Right, so that is quite efficient to us, helping us like narrow down everything. And then with the whole AI thing, we can go through deal a lot faster, right? As a VC fund, I mean, everybody leveraging AI right now. And then at our portfolio companies, we're seeing that. We see that our portfolio companies not only leveraging AI for efficiency, which is basically help you to write code faster, review code faster, or helping to train the sales team, you know, to understand the products and, you know, get on the road faster. But also you start seeing that a lot of portfolio companies already leveraging AI embedded into the value proposition of the product offerings. Make the product is more intelligent, make the product is more personalized, which is a very critical edge in the today market. And that's what make us very exciting and very bullish over the next few years.
A bunch more questions. Let's start. If we were to distill AI for now for two groups, let's call it co-pilots and agents. And we'll define co-pilots as, you know, as a tool that can increase our productivity, but we're still using it. And, you know, AI agents for automation. Do you find yourself today gravitating towards one set of AI tools more than the other? Or are you looking at AI, or co-pilots and AI agents the same?
I was saying that I never fully, you know, I want to think about this question a little bit. Obviously, on a daily basis right now, we use, from your definition, right, AI co-pilot to make us to do better job faster, but we haven't fully automate anything, like completely anything, which is the definition you just give is the AI agent. Because I do think that everything right now at this stage, I mean, you know, everything changed so fast, especially in our VC world, right? I'm speaking at the moment right now that I don't think that the AI can fully, you know, replace human. We always have to have the human loop into it. And even everything I'm doing right now is always have to have somebody reviewing it. I think it's just, it's allowing us to be more creative.
Yep.
To be more efficient, more productive. But at the end of the day, there's a human factor coming in, you know, adjusting things here a little bit. And even with different AI model, so if you can ask the same question, they're giving you different answer, different perspective. And you as a human being, you have to adjust it the way or the style that it fitting into the culture, fitting your style. So I think that right now I'm more on the AI co-pilot, more so than completely giving a task to someone and not worry about it.
So that makes complete sense. And, you know, I think AI agents do have a tremendous amount of promise. You know, you mentioned having an office in the Bay Area. I don't know if you've been on a Waymo, but I was completely mesmerized watching this car drive me around. And it's a great example of how it's coming. I think it depends on the use case. But I also think it really points to this question of how are businesses going to monetize AI? You know, my perspective has been is that in the case of Waymo, AI attached to hardware, it is extremely valuable. You know, or AI that is used to collect data, extremely valuable. I'd love your perspective. Do you look for a specific use case or moat, if you will, to get you excited about a potential investment in a company that's seeking to leverage artificial intelligence?
Yeah, so I think when we look at the AI companies these days, going through the due diligence, it's very important for us to see that the company has some AI talent, right? And understanding how to build the AI product, understanding to have a clear roadmap, a little bit. We call like the technical stack, have the people who know how to do AI. You cannot say that you build an AI company without the talent behind. But then go a little bit deeper is we want to make sure that the company's understanding about the moat in the public market with a moat, a competitive advantage. So we will carefully asking like, do you have think that you have some kind of like data moat? Do you have some kind of data that other people you don't think that they have ownership of that data? Or certain companies, if they don't have that, we want to understand the distribution moat. If you build a product, right? Because in the AI era, I think speed is something is quite important. And if you already have a distribution channel because of your network, because of the background you have or people involved, I do think that you have a competitive advantage. And another thing that when we look into the AI, especially the AI companies selling to enterprise, do you know a way, efficient way to integrate into the system? I don't think that when people building the product, they go and they pitch about the product, but they haven't gotten into the whole integration process, which can take forever. And startup, the days is very limited. So you have to figure out how to shorten your sales cycle, how to make sure that you can sell and integrate into your customer system very well. So those are the thing that we look at. Recently, you will hear a lot of companies, AI company will showcase you, they have certain logos, certain revenue, which I do think that we always want to make sure that we look at under the hood a little bit, meaning that as those logo, even though very big logos, would be like a real contract? Or is it just more like, a pilot? Or sometimes people just want to use it because they feel missing out something and they're not going to renew, right? So the quality, the revenue, the quality of the revenue is quite important when we look at it as well.
I couldn't agree more. I great dovetail, and that is quantitative metrics that you look at. And I so I heard I heard retention. I heard churn. What other metrics are important to fuel either pre-investment or post-investment?
I think one thing we want the founders to understand the unit economics very well, right? Is the reason is so important, and I think one of the mistake that a lot of founders make is they're scaling way earlier than they should. Just because they have one customer, just because they think that there's some traction. And in the VC world, sometimes you scale because you feel like you're under pressure of investor, of your peers, that you have to show some top line growth. And we want them to understand the unit economics, because if you have a negative unit economics, or if you have negative gross margin, there's no reason to scale. You just burn more. You just amplify the inefficiency. And sometimes when you scale so fast, you hire more people, you lose the speed and the culture of a startup, right? So understanding the unit economics, the way you acquire customer, how much customer, in a fancy way we say CAC, customer acquisition cost, or understand how much customer bring to you the LTV, so that you can wrap your head around the unit economics is quite important. It's not just about the top line.
I'm curious. I know it could depend on the underlying company, and who they're selling to and their industry. But a metric that we generally use in a benchmark is a customer acquisition cost payback period no more than 12 months, and also a return on customer acquisition cost of at least 3 to 1.
Would love to know what benchmarks you use, if you can speak in generalities, if it's otherwise investment by investment specific.
Yeah, so I think because at Fuel we invest in different, you know, business model. Different business model require you to track different things. If it's like a consumer companies, you track different thing than if you are enterprise SaaS company. But in general, like you just mentioned, right? LTV over CAC is like 3x is quite important. You mentioned one earlier is the net dollar retention, things like that. Because at the end of the day, you can grow so much, but if it's a leaking bucket. Whatever, how much you're trying to like, you know, fill the bucket and it's just leaking out, it's no point to do that, right? So you would want to see the retention and also those kind of retention. When you say net dollar retention, you understand that if the company can upsell or cross sales as well, because you know, for any startup company for them to grow, they will build a core product, but then they need to be able to, you know, build other related products. How efficient they are to go and grow, you know, their revenue by increasing the ability spending of their customers. So those are the things like net retention, gross retention is quite important to us.
And so, let's just say in the normal course, you're conducting a review with a portfolio company, and you see there's opportunity for improvement, either because churn is increasing or payback periods increasing. What's the degree that Fuel will get involved to assist them address any opportunities for improvement?
Yeah, we actually, you know, one of the thing going back to the home hedge venture concept, we very active invest on the cap table. And that's one way we call operational hedge, right? You have to track the KPI, not vanity KPI, but like, you know, real KPI so that you can identify any threat or any opportunity early coming from the public market, from the hedge, before any, you know, problem happen. You can actually see it in the data, right? Everything before they slow and full stop, they actually slowing down. Anything increase, the rate of change going to increase it as well. So we have our portfolio companies, you know, sending us data on the monthly basis. And you know, certain high conviction company, we're sitting on the board so that we can get first insight and then you know shape the outcome as well. So I can saying that we're pretty involved with our portfolio companies.
You know, I think it's great, and you know, I'll acknowledge my bias in the beginning because we're in the business of producing dashboards for the C-suite. But I think your assessment is spot on. You know, obviously the numbers are a part of the story, but absolutely, I mean, you can see trends forming.
Yeah.
You know, so just good old trend analysis can be extremely valuable. And then, of course, algebra and understanding what the underlying variables are that are driving the metrics. I want to come back to something you said earlier when we were talking about AI, and without revealing any trade secrets, you know, would love to hear how you were incorporating that within the day-to-day operations of Fuel. You know, obviously, venture is a very time-consuming business because you're talking to founders, LPs, potential portfolio companies all day long. How have you taken advantage of technology to optimize operations?
Yeah, so you mean at Fuel Venture Capital specifically?
That's
Yeah,
right.
I think that, you know, we invest in AI literacy, meaning that everybody on our team know how to use AI for, you know, any task that they are involved, not just the deal team, investment team, but also operation team, fundraising team as well. And, you know, specifically in the investment team, we will have certain models so that is helping us to screen through the deal faster. There's certain question that you know we build in the model, especially you know for an early stage, we ask certain question. For the late stage, we ask certain question too, right? Because when you even for AI company, if you go and ask like a person with technical background, they will give you a whole list. But as you know, as an entrepreneur, you don't have the time and you don't have the resource to build everything that they want you to build. So you have to kind of like build a model, identify what is the thing in the infrastructure, the foundation that they have to have, they cannot miss. And then, as them as they grow, raising cigarette, raising Series A, they will continue to build. So the model will reflect that to help us to screen through deal, understand that the company have certain very important thing that we call it a checkpoint for our early preliminary due diligence before going to in-depth. In-depth is the part where you have to have the human loop. Right. And it takes more time. It takes longer times. So you want to screen through all of the company first before you moving into the in-depth and involve, calling customer, talking to the lead investor from the last round. You cannot have AI doing that. Right. So that we use AI that way. For our investor, we're leveraging the AI in a way that we're actually building right now. That, when we're fundraising, they have a lot of questions that they want to ask. And, some people like talk to us, some people like to play inside the data room a little bit by themselves. And, we're building an AI agent that can help them to navigate the data room a little bit easier. Let's say, hey, can you share with me a little bit about the latest investment that you just make? The AI agent can, provide that information instead of like dropping the investor into, the LP portal. That's what we call the data room, which turns up like audit financial statement, all of the investment memos, all of the portfolio company's performance. They might feel overwhelmed with that.
I love it. I love how you're innovating across the board. And I admit, I keep thinking about this concept of venture hedge venture. And I'm sure you're going to get me thinking about it for the rest of the day after we wrap up here. Maggie, this has been a great podcast. Before we wrap up, just a few more questions. One of my go-to, and I admit, I really enjoy asking this question. So it's a retrospective. If you were given the opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, and you can pick the age, your call, what would you share with yourself?
It's funny that you asked that because the other days I actually wrote, and I share with you later after the podcast. I wrote a story that me meeting myself, I think like 10 years ago, like at a coffee. And then we kind of like talk together about, how much we have grown and things like that. But I do think that, one of the thing, if I have a chance to meet myself, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I'm going to give an advice in a way that, you're going to go into venture capital, and venture capital is not only an asset class, it's an access class. Your capital is the only thing that right now, technology democratized everything, information, but with venture, it's still a relationship driven, right? You learn about deals, you get to invite to the cap table, you get to know this investor is all about relationship driven. So I want myself, the youngest myself, to prioritize building a strong and authentic networks. Right, because I think that's something that I missed in the past. Because as I share with you, my background came from Vietnam, coming here when I was 17, all way behind my peers 17 years. Meaning that when I'm sleeping, that's when I'm learning, because I'm playing catch up. And when
Sure.
you're playing catch up, you're very focused on technical skill. You're trying to understand, what can you be better at, math, finance, building models, CFA, and then try to prioritize like how do you understand the culture, like the government, like everything's here. But the missing part is you have to go out there. You have to expose yourself to a lot of people and building, for you a strong, authentic professional network, because you're going to go into your career in an area that access is something very important and relationship is very important. And that's what the advice I'm going to give myself.
I love it. And my experience mirrors yours. If I had opportunity, I would do the same. Make time for getting to know other people, I think is so valuable on so many levels. But I probably just a function to a degree, a function of youth. But yes, I can imagine, when making a transition like you did, congratulations for your success. It's fantastic. Yeah, I totally see it. Maggie, last question. If you could see anybody be a guest on the Innovators and Investors podcast, who would you like to see come join us?
Mean like if I can see anyone.
Yes.
I think I would love to see Cathie Wood. I can
Oh.
pick anyone, right? Famous one as well. Yeah, I think that I admire her. I think that she would in a very unique way that she figured out how to introduce innovation, investing innovation into the future to a lot of investors in the public market. She know how to break it down, the concept of very advanced hard technology to understand for everybody to invest. And that's what she's doing in the public market. Also packaging, the investment in a way that everybody can participate. And that's what I try to do, in the private market. One of my belief is, the institutional investor over the past year during the internet boom and during the mobile area was able to take advantage of this asset class, venture capital, to generate a lot of returns. And I think that with this AI, we believe that this is another platform shift and going to create a lot of, future Google, future Uber, and we want to see, the retail investor, the private clients, have the opportunity to take advantage of it, right? And so that's why, I think that it will take a group like Fuel Venture Capital, a person like us, like me, understanding about both the public and the private markets. Understand why this asset class is so important and deserve an allocation in the diversified portfolio and bring it to a retail client saying that you need to have 5%, 10% of your portfolio because this is so important because you want your portfolio to be future ready. So that's why that's explained, the person I want to meet is Cathie Wood because she did it in such a nice way.
I'm gonna make it. We're gonna add it to the list, and I will share it with the team, and we're gonna make best efforts to see if we can't get Kathy to join us on the podcast, and we'll give you credit when she joins us. Maggie, I appreciate your time. Thank you. Tremendous insights. If there are any members of our audience who'd like to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. That's where I actually find a lot of members for my teams, the people who join Fuel Venture Capital. That's where I interact with a lot of founders as well. So yes, if you message me on LinkedIn, you can get a hold of me.
Perfect. And again, Maggie, thank you. And for the benefit of our audience, Maggie Vo, Managing Partner and Chief Investment Officer at Fuel Venture Capital. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, Founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is at finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.